We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
Well, it's pretty amazing when you think about it. This is going to be one of my long questions with multiple clauses in it, but bear with me. But it's interesting to think about because, A, if we didn't have the internet, we'd be even in worse shape, I think, as a people, because we'd be completely in the dark. And you wonder, originally, you know, kind of a few years ago, the idea kind of was that maybe the internet was like this big mistake on the powers that be's part. Maybe it kind of got out of control and they didn't want all this freedom in the hands of people. But then now, the more you learn about what they're really doing with the internet, it's kind of scary because they fed us this world, this virtual world, but then in turn they were harvesting all of our information. So it's like maybe it wasn't a big mistake. Maybe it was just a giant, you know, worldwide web that they ensnared us in to get everybody, you know, on the record in private.
First you have to understand the internet never was started off to be a great information highway for the people.
That's what I mean.
It started off as a military project, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think to a certain extent, I think it did kind of get out of hand. But now, I think, like you said, I think they realized, hey, this is great. Now, look at all the people now on the social networks. You know, this is saving the surveillance state millions of dollars.
Right.
You know? They don't have to come and listen to your telephone conversations. All they got to do is go to your Twitter page or whatever, and they'll know exactly what you're doing and who you're in contact with.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing. And I'm just wondering when they're going to start sending letters out saying thank you for being on the social media because you saved us from having to monitor everyone, you know.
Yeah, no kidding. You'd think our taxes would go down, but forget it.
Yeah, no, but then also we now see, in fact, Congress is already, again, even though it kind of got pushed down a little bit last time, but they are still considering laws and legislation to curtail the internet. And I venture to say before too long, you're going to see the internet be severely circumvented by, and it'll all be in the name of trying to save the children or help us be something more easy. I saw this happen, Tim, back in the 70s during the fad for citizen band radio, CB radios.
Mm-hmm.
That started off with just some truck drivers who would use the CB radio. They only had 24 channels. And, but they had a huge range. You could put boosters on there and you could get a broadcast signal out, I don't know, 50, 100 miles, 200 miles. And these truckers were really talking with each other. And of course they were doing stuff associated with their business like smoky reports and roadblocks and, you know, damage to the highways and stuff, which was really good. But then also they were talking about events of the day. And then it got pretty popular and everybody was buying a CB radio. Okay. And they were all talking, hey, good buddy. And they're sharing information all across the country. And that was one of the first steps, I think, in starting to really educate and wise up the population. Well, the governments, it got out of hand. And they're going, oh my goodness, what are you going to do about this? If they tried to ban it, of course, there would be a huge outcry and backlash.
Right.
So what they did was they came out and they said, okay, look, you know, we're going to bring you 100 channels now. Wow. So get your new CB radios. You get all these more channels, but they cut the power down to where you couldn't broadcast over about 5 miles. And so all of a sudden everybody had their new CB radios, but they found out they couldn't reach but about 5 miles. And so today the CB fad is just back to a few truckers using it. Okay.
Yeah.
And the public's not using it anymore. And I think they're going to try to pull something similar with the internet because it has gotten a little out of their control. And I don't know how successful they're going to be because I know countries like China, Egypt and various ones Greece have tried to curtail the internet, and all you do is go get another server in another country.
Right.
And it may be that it's not possible to put the horses back in the barn, but they're going to try, and it'll get to be a deal where unless you want to just, have a few, internet sites that you visit, you're going to have to pay. and you have to pay for this and pay for that, and they're going to come up with some kind of tax, and they're going to come up with some kind of let's protect the children, you know, and they're going to try to curtail the use of the internet. Now, how successful they're going to be, I don't know, because I know one kid who says he bounces his stuff out of Russia or some other country. And so I'm not sure how successful they're going to be, but they are definitely working to try to curtail the reach and frequency of the internet.
Yeah. Maybe they'll come up with some law where you can't be bouncing stuff out of the country or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
who knows?
Sure.
That's the kind of thing they do.
I mean, back in the 30s when the money, the Great Depression, and money was scarce and people started hoarding gold, the government just outlawed gold, said you can't use gold, you can't hold gold.
Right.
And so, you know, yeah, anything they want, they can pass a law for.
Pretty much. Now, I've been making this argument on the show for a while, just sort of warning about the ubiquity of the cell phones. And I talked to some, I'm not sure if we discussed this on last year's show, but my idea kind of is that when I first got into this, there was a lot of fear and talk and discussion about microchipping and how everyone was going to get chipped. And my argument is that the cell phone is the chip, that they've already fooled everybody. You don't need to put it under the skin. They've got it in your pocket, so they don't need to put it, you know, they don't need to chip you. That's my theory on why everybody has a cell phone now, because
well,
it accomplishes
almost the same thing. I had a personal experience where my mother-in-law lost her bag at the airport, and the airline couldn't figure out where it went. Nobody could figure out what it was, but she had a cell phone in that bag. So they call that number, and they were able to track the bag through the cell phone number. So, see, yes, they can track your movements. If you carry around that cell phone, then they know where you are 24/7. And, yeah, it's a double-edged sword, and most people don't even realize that. And, of course, this is not even getting into the health hazards of the cell phone.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because the cell phones... Well, figure it out. You've got a little bitty device that fits in your shirt pocket, or you can clip it to your belt and carry it around with you. And yet it is a radio transmitter, and it is transmitting to satellites, and the satellites are transmitting to it and via some of the cell towers. And if you're the only way that you get contact is by transmitting a very powerful electromagnetic energy wave. Okay, well, if you hold that up to your head a great number of times during the day, you are just beaming that radiation into your brain. No wonder you're going to develop brain cancer.
Right.
And if you clip it to your belt, you're probably going to end up, if you're a man, with testicular cancer, or a woman with ovarian cancer. And, you know, the problem is we don't really know what the long-term effects of this are going to be. But something tells me that in about 20, 25 years, we're going to start seeing the stories like we saw in the 60s and 70s of cigarette smoking, that, hey, this is really bad for you, you know. By then, it'll be too late for a great number of people. But again, this fits in, again, with the New World Order people in these bloodlines. They, in their opinion, there's just too much human population. How many times do you see all the stories, they just continue about overpopulation? And let me tell you something. It's simply not true. And here's how I can prove that. Right now, today, in Hong Kong, and picture Hong Kong with all those high-rise buildings in just that little harbor area there.
Yeah.
The average living space, this is average. You got rich people with a lot more, and then you got real poor people with a room the size of a telephone booth, but the average living space in Hong Kong today is 1,700 square feet. Hey, that's not a bad size apartment, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know I lived in apartments all through college, and I don't think any of them were close to 1,700 square feet. Okay, so based on 1,700 square feet, Tim, the entire 7 billion population of the world could live comfortably enough in the state of Texas. So see, when you look at it from that standpoint, it's like, wow, there's not that much of an overpopulation problem. What we have is a population distribution problem. Everybody's jammed into those large megalopolises, you know?
Right, right. Well, I don't know if you've seen, they have these huge cities in China that are like, they're empty, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, if we have no room for people, why do they have these giant cities in China that they can't get anybody into?
Yeah, or I'll tell you what, just try to drive through West Texas. You start off in the morning, and at 6 o'clock in the evening, you'll still be driving, and you haven't even gotten out of Texas. and you don't see anybody. There's nothing. Just, you know, just flat land. You
right.
know? And so it's like, wait a minute. What we got to do is spread out.
Yeah.
And again, we're back to the greatest conspiracy, because we have the technology to do all that. We could have those mag trains, electric trains, you know, we could have entertainment centers and business centers and social gathering centers, and everybody could live out and have an acre or two and grow their own food, put solar panels on the roof, you know. I mean, you know, we have the technology to make this world a wonderful, livable place, but no, it ain't happening.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that stood out in the book that I wanted to ask you about, sort of extrapolate a little bit on, you talk about the Patriot Act and how it turns out they primarily use it more for the war on drugs than they do for catching terrorists. And I was just kind of wondering, I guess, why? Why? I mean, you would think if they want to break the human population, you know, why would they care when they want people on all kinds of drugs and stuff, just ruining their lives anyway?
Or well, they're attacking us on all fronts.
Yeah.
They're spraying through the chemtrails. They're spraying stuff in the air that's dumping on us, and the air we have to breathe. The food is bad. If it's not actually poisonous or has debilitating chemicals in it, it's rich with sugar and MSG and all kinds of stuff that's making us overweight, obese, and unhealthy country and people. And the water, they're putting fluoride in the water. See, in fact, here, the latest big thing was the fact that we claimed that Assad in Syria had, his forces had used sarin gas against the civilian population, and Obama and the hawks in Congress said, we got to go bomb them and missile them, you know, because that's wrong to put that. Well, consider this. One of the major ingredients of sarin gas is sodium fluoride, which dumbs you down. Okay, so if we're going to go and attack leaders who have used sodium fluoride against their own populations, I guess we're going to have to start with the White House. Because the government is putting sodium fluoride in our water supply, 2/3 of the water supply of this country. So, you know, this is, they are just trying to depopulate the nation because with their control through these corporations. They want us dead, basically. Prince Philip, you know, of the Royal Windsor family, which, by the way, is the Windsor was just a castle they once owned. They changed their name from Mountbatten, and Mountbatten got turned around from Battenberg. They're all Germans, okay?
Yeah.
And they all trace back again to these same bloodlines. In fact, in my book, you'll find that President George W. Bush and also Al Gore and also John Kerry and also Barack Obama and also Dick Cheney are all related.
Yeah.
And they're all of the same bloodline family, and they all trace back to the royal family of England, to the Windsors. It's absolutely incredible. What do you think the odds are of that? And these are the very people that I'm talking about. And they want us dead. Prince Philip is quoted publicly as saying if there is reincarnation, he wants to come back as a deadly virus to help solve the overpopulation problem. They want us dead. And so I'm telling people, you better start paying attention to all this New World Order talk, because this is not just a philosophical debate. This is self-defense.
Right.
You better know what these people are up to and start taking steps to protect yourself and your family.
Well, see, the scary part and the deceptive part, and it's clear that this is part of the way they work, is that everything is, like, so slow. It's a seeping effect, you know? Like I said, we've been talking for 8 years, and it's getting worse, but it's getting worse so slowly that people, I think, are, you know, some people are waking up, but others, like, still haven't woken up to the fact that there seems to be something afoot.
Well, that's because they're watching TV, you know, and so they're totally distracted and discombobulated and spoon-fed misinformation and disinformation. The whole idea is to keep us ignorant and therefore keep control over us.
Right, right. And like you make the point in the book, to these folks, to these families and everything, you know, a year, a decade, a century, it doesn't matter to them as long as the overarching ultimate plan comes together, which I presume is just total control over the planet.
Right. Well, if you want to know what the game plan is, I would suggest that you read a book that was published by a guy whose name was Eric Arthur Blair, and he was a Fabian socialist in England, and although he was not of the royalty, he nevertheless was well connected to the aristocracy there in England. I think he got a pretty good view of what the plan was and what they planned for everything. And so in 1948, he wrote a book under the name George Orwell, and he transposed the numbers of the date, and his book was called 1984. And in there, if you'll read it, you'll find that they had divided the world into three major economic blocks. In the book, it was Asiana, East Asiana, and Oceania. Today in the real world, we've got the European Union and the soon-to-be North American Union. The South American Union already exists. And then it'll be easy enough to, since they have top-down control societies, to create the Asian Union.
Yeah.
All right. And so then you've got these three socialist unions that take care of everybody, watch over them, surveil them from cradle to grave. But they're always in conflict with one another. And soon as one conflict is resolved, say between the North American Union and the Asian Union, then we'll go against the European Union. And they'll keep that conflict going to maximize control and profit. And we see that beginning to take shape today. That is the New World Order they're talking about. A lot of people don't quite understand the plan, and they keep saying they want one world government. No, they don't really want one world government, because then they couldn't keep up this conflict, and the tensions, to keep up the armaments race and keep the power, going. So there's the plan right there, and
yeah,
it was all detailed in 1948. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, if you go read 1984, you'll find that the protagonist, Winston Smith, his job was to, this is 1948, his job was to work for the Ministry of Truth, and he would sit at a desk with a view screen and a keyboard. Oops, sounds like a computer. And his job was to go back into the historical records and alter them to conform to the latest party official version. In other words, if Tim Banal was suddenly deemed a non-person by the government, then he would go in and find all the pictures of Tim Banal and all the references to him and delete them and get them out of there, so that just didn't happen. And this is happening today.
It's pretty wild stuff. I mean, you know, you wonder. You know, I think you asked the rhetorical question in the book, you know, after you say, are they even us, these powers that be, you wonder, is there a counterpoint to this? Is there, you know, where's our Enki? You know, who's going to bail us out of this? Is it up to us? And is it hopeless? That's the scary part.
Well, I don't think it's hopeless, because truth will out, and truth will come through eventually. But all you have to do is go back and look through history. The reason that the dark side has a very competent and focused, group they have a definite plan, and they're working their plan. And then you ask, where's the counterpart to that? And unfortunately, it seems to be that I'm not sure there is one, although throughout history there have been people who've tried to break the mold and show us other ways of living. And, of course, you can go back to Jesus, and you can talk about Gandhi, and you can talk about Martin Luther King. You might even bring in John F. Kennedy, you know. And what happened to these guys? They all got murdered, right?
Right.
So, see, if you're the good guy, then you preach goodness and sweetness and light and consideration and rational thinking. But if you're one of the bad guys, you just kill your opponents. So that's why they seem to have the upper hand all the time. There's even a conspiracy theory that the recent shooting at the Navy Yard was to murder some of the provost marshal's executive officers there, who may have been preparing to arrest President Obama on charges of treason for any number of things. You know, we all know that he has not only fulfilled any of his promises in 2008, but that he's actually almost out Bush. And here he was trying to start another war in Syria. And the irony of that was he's the president that gets a Nobel Peace Prize. And
yeah.
Yet he's waged more war than George W. Bush did.
Yeah, that's the – I kind of heard sort of rumblings about, you know, military coup in the ramp up to Syria. You wonder if that might be something that might bail us out of the situation.
Well, you know, I've looked into that too, and here's the big problem. If they tried to pull something like that, well, their big stumbling block is they don't control the mass media.
Mm.
And as a result, we would be told, oh, this is an attempt by the generals to a military dictatorship and set in place, and they're trying to overturn the Constitution. You know, the exact opposite of what they would be doing. But since they don't control the mass media, that would be the story everybody heard, and they would probably not be able to get the support of the majority of the American citizens, so that's what precludes them from taking steps and trying to arrest some of these
right.
Washington leaders, you know.
Hmm.
Now, if we could ever get a free press going again, assuming it's ever been free, but in a way it has been. When I started in the news business in the 60s, most of the local newspapers, TV stations, radio stations were owned by local people. And although there were problems there, sometimes they'd be a little bit too much Chamber of Commerce, you know, yay for our side, yay for our team. But I found out there's worse stuff than that, okay? And that is when they all get taken over by these large multinational corporations that are run by people who don't even give a damn about what happens to the United States. In fact, we're kind of an irritant in their side because, you know, we have in this country a tradition of freedom and democracy, and we have a constitution and bill of rights that guarantees us the legal basis for our individual freedom and liberty. And worse than that, we all have guns, okay? So they got a real problem with us, and that's why they are pulling out all the stops in an effort to paint guns as something terrible, and that we have to take them all away, and then we'll have a safer, nicer world. Yeah, for them, okay?
Right.
Take over. Now, I think the fact that we've got so many guns in the hands of the civilians here in this country is the only reason that we're not under a total clamp down dictatorship right now, but it's certainly moving in that direction. And speaking of, they keep saying guns kill, guns kill. You know, I had a shotgun and I loaded it up and set it over in the corner and it's been there for a long, long time. It hadn't killed anybody. So it's just, I guess it's falling down on the job.
Well, I had this in the notes, this rash of mass shootings. It's really scary. You know, you just wonder what is going on with the world. I think
what's going on with the mass shootings is not the guns. Everybody's got a gun.
Right.
And I grew up here in Texas, you know, everybody had a gun. And we even brought guns to school, you know, they'd have them in the racks of the pickup truck, you know.
Yeah.
But nobody shot anybody. The reason for these mass shootings are the drugs, the psychoactive, psychotropic drugs.
Yeah.
everybody, the guy in the Navy Yard, the two guys at Columbine, you name it, they're all on these drugs. And these drugs, they'll tell you right off that they promote homicidal and suicidal tendencies. Well, you know, if you get somebody who might be kind of borderline anyway, and then you give him these drugs, and then maybe you even beam some of these electromagnetic frequencies at them, man, you can drop them over the edge, and they'll just go out and start doing anything.
Yeah.
This is what we need to concentrate on, but you rarely ever hear about any of this in the mass media because they count on the pharmaceutical corporations for a huge chunk of their advertising revenue.
Yeah. You turn on the nightly news and every other commercial's a Viagra.
It's either a pickup truck or a drug.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that kind of ties into the question earlier about why they use the Patriot Act for the war on drugs. They want people on drugs. They just want them on their drugs.
Exactly. That's why they continue to outlaw marijuana, although it's been proven time and time and time again. Number one, nobody has ever died from an overdose of marijuana, okay?
Right.
Nobody. And number two, there's more and more scientific evidence that medical marijuana has actually proved beneficial to so many people. And yet it's still classified as a class A narcotic, you know, by the federal government. But here's the irony of that. Do you know that the federal government has a patent on medical marijuana?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I think they're just waiting until they can get a lock on it, and then they'll legalize it. But see, the problem is I'm not sure they'll ever fully legalize it, because once they legalize it, then you're not going to have to go buy it from the government like you do other things, get a prescription or whatever, because if they ever legalize it, you can just grow it in your own yard.
Right.
And so it'll take all the profit out of the drug thing, and it'll all drop off. And, of course, the only argument I hear is that, oh, man, if they legalize it, everybody will turn into potheads. Well, you know what, Tim? That's the same argument they used by the people opposed to ending alcohol prohibition. They said, well, if you end prohibition, everybody's going to turn into a drunk. Well, it didn't happen,
right.
Okay? Because once you could get alcohol legally, then alcoholism actually dropped.
Right. Plus the mystique of it all is gone in some people's minds.
Yeah, there's no mystique. There's no big money in it. Organized crime goes and does something else, you know. It makes eminently good sense, but then, of course, when has common sense got anything to do with the laws they keep passing?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's you know, I mean, you wonder beyond the drugging of these people, it does seem like there's just a tension going on right now. People are just tense. It's the economy. It's the weight of the world right now, and it's scary. You feel like things are coming to a head, and you wonder what that
well,
is.
Well, I definitely feel like things are coming to a head, because all you have to do is look at the preparations that the government's making. On the one hand, they say, oh, everything's fine, folks. You know, just keep voting. Keep buying stock, you know. And yet, on the other hand, they're building these deep underground bunkers. They're stockpiling weapons. They're stockpiling ammunition, a lot of which is of a caliber that's not even compatible to any of the weapons used by our military or police forces. So wait a minute. What are they doing with all this stuff?
Yeah. You wonder if they know something's coming that we don't know.
They know something.
And you know, and circle back around again to the very beginning of our occulted history, it's like, I think the evidence is there, as you've amply demonstrated in the book, that the human race seems to rise and fall and rise and fall. And you're wondering if we're at the crescendo here of one last rise before
right. We
reach
well,
the nadir.
Well, of course, then they've finished up the seed vault up in Spitsbergen, Norway, which was a joint operation of the Norwegian government and Monsanto and Bill Gates Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation.
Yeah.
And what they've done there is they have put into the side of this granite mountain this huge seed vault that is holding all of the world's seeds, you know, but these are These are not the Terminator seeds that Monsanto is trying to sell all around the world. They're what are called heritage seeds. They are the seeds of plants and food crops that will actually germinate and keep producing food for the next season and the next season. You know, so I think that tells you something right there. I think they know something's coming and they want to be prepared for it.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if, like, you know, going back to that rise and fall thing, if, like, this time around, they know about the rises and the falls, and they said, we're going to survive this one. We're going to make it through this one. We'll go underground, whatever their plan is. We'll go off planet, you know, and survive the Planet X event or whatever. But it seems like that's their whole thing, like making sure they survive at all costs.
Exactly. I think it even goes beyond that. I think they want to do more than just survive. They want to be able to come out from under their shelters and then take control.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's on that scary note, what's...
No, let's end it on an upper note.
Okay.
Hey, look, there's more of us than there are of them, and if we'll just wise up and take back our power as powerful energy beings that we are, then, you know, we could turn this around. And we don't have to have a big bloody revolution. All we got to do is just say no.
Right.
Okay? You know, when they say, well, we want all your taxes, say no. Well, we're going to go to war. No. You know. Well,
yeah.
We're going to make you buy health insurance, whether you want it or not. No. You know, just say no. Say no. We're not going to do this, you know. And the key thing there is we got to get rid of all those clowns in Washington.
Right.
Who are either blackmailed, are bought off, okay, are intimidated by the special interest groups. And what do? You vote them all out and put somebody in there that nobody's ever heard of, and then you watch them like a hawk, and if they do what you think they ought to be doing and work for the betterment of the entire population, then you vote them back in. And if they don't do what you think they ought to do, then you vote them out again, okay?
Exactly.
Now, you know, Tim, that's not even a revolutionary or radical idea. That's the way it's supposed to work.
Exactly. Exactly. I got two quick questions for you before I let you go. This came to me. I had a few beers last night, and this came to me out of the ether, so I feel like it's kismet that I ask you this.
Out of the foam.
Exactly. For some reason, it dawned on me to ask you about the whole Ross Perot thing that happened back when Clinton got elected, and he, mm-hmm. you know, it's very mysterious, and you never hear anything about him ever anymore, and you barely ever see him. I don't even know if he's still alive. I presume he is, but
yeah.
what the hell happened there with that whole thing?
Okay, well, it's pretty simple. Ross Perot is a big supporter of the Republicans and a big supporter of George Herbert Walker Bush. But then he got really interested in the POW issue for Vietnam veterans, the fact that apparently we left a lot of people behind when we pulled out of Vietnam about 1975, I guess it was. Okay, so he got really, so he had money and he hired investigators and they began to go and they found out that yes, there were still people being held, Americans being held in Southeast Asia, but they were being held as hostages because the Vietnamese communists that had taken over, they wanted some concessions out of the United States. And so the United States says, no, we don't recognize that, and we don't think that's true, and blah, blah. And it was a big stalemate. But then in the process of investigating the Vietnam POWs, he found the drug running routes where people within the CIA and people within the military were using tax-supported stuff, you know,
yeah.
to smuggle drugs, hard drugs, heroin, into this country. And it so incensed him that he decided he was going to run against George Herbert Walker Bush when was that, 92, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And, okay, and so then he started his third party and he started his campaign. He spoke the truth. He told about the hollow sound we were going to hear from the World Trade Organization. He began to figure out that this little ruling elite or would-be ruling elite that was behind these secret societies like the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, and then behind the World Trade Organization was trying to worm their way into control over the United States. And he began, talking truthfully, and people responded, and there was a huge groundswell of support for Ross Perot. And then just as his third party campaign was gaining a lot of momentum, he dropped out.
Right.
Now, why did he drop out? Well, he didn't make that a secret. He said because out of the concern for the safety of his family. Now wait a minute. Let's think about this a minute. Here he was, a presidential candidate, a contender. Supposedly he was eligible for protection from the CIA, the FBI, the Secret Service, the U.S. military, police forces in this country.
Plus he was super rich.
Yeah, so who is he afraid of? And I submit to you, them.
Yeah.
That's who he's afraid of, because they'd kill Kennedy and got away with it. They killed Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy, and they got away with it. They were in charge, and so I'm sure they passed the word, you bow out, or we'll not only kill you, we'll kill your family and your family dog.
Jeez.
So he just drops out.
Yeah.
But see, nobody, one of the only rules of the game today is you can't give away the game.
Yeah.
And that's because, of course, if he'd stood up and said that what I just said, everybody would go, the media would brand him as an absolute insane lunatic.
You know, right.
This guy's a nut. And unfortunately, too many people would go along with it because they don't know what's actually going on.
Exactly. And the final quick question for you, and I'm kind of proud that here on the 50th anniversary almost of the JFK assassination, we didn't spend the whole conversation on that. But I guess what's your overall thoughts here on the – I'm sure you're going to be a very busy man come November.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well,
I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
Let me get in an unabashed plug here. My book, Crossfire, The Plot to Kill Kennedy, is just about to come out in a new – upgraded, expanded, and updated version. It's still
awesome.
Going to be Crossfire, The Plot to Kill Kennedy, and it should be out possibly in early November.
Excellent.
And so be sure and look for that. It's got a tremendous new index in it, and it's got a lot of new information. Okay, Kennedy assassination is real simple. You can either believe government pronouncements backed by a little or even contradictory information that says Lee Harvey Oswald did it all by himself. Or you can begin to follow the official government line from the House Select Committee on Assassinations in the early 1980s that said, well, there was at least one shot being fired from the grassy knoll, so it was probably a conspiracy.
Right.
Okay, so if you accept that it was a conspiracy, which most people have according to the national polls, then you have to ask yourself, why is it 50 years later that it is not only not acknowledged by the government or the mass media that there was a conspiracy, but that they're still trying to cover that fact up? Okay, well, that's because in November of 1963, there was a coup d'etat in this country. And I can tell you that it was handled at the uppermost levels of the power of the federal government of the United States. And this because, and the two men who I will name as guilty in the assassination of President John F. Kennedy are his successor, Lyndon Baines Johnson, and his next-door neighbor and old buddy, FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah.
Now, can I prove that those two men orchestrated or ordered the Kennedy assassination? No, I cannot. But what I can prove beyond any reasonable shadow of a doubt is that those two men took steps that included destruction of evidence, fabrication of evidence, suppression of evidence, alteration of evidence, and intimidation of witnesses. Now, these, under our legal system, that makes them accessories after the fact. And in Texas, we've executed people for a murder that the facts show they never pulled the trigger, but they knew about it, they were present, or they helped cover it up, and it made them accessories after the facts. And under our system of law, that makes them as guilty as the person who pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
So Hoover and Johnson are guilty and for covering up the truth of the Kennedy assassination, and that's what turned what at the time was merely another Texas homicide, because there were no federal laws about assassinating the president, into a true coup d'etat, a change of government through a violent act.
Well, I'm concerned that, you know, in about 6 weeks on the anniversary, it's going to be a maddening period of time, because I'm afraid we're going to be fed the same old BS that we've been fed all these years.
Oh, yeah. You're going to be inundated.
Yeah.
And it's all going to come from CBS, NBC, CNN, National Public Radio, all of the major mass media, media outlets. And that's because of this control by these five corporations.
Right. Do you expect any revelations at all, or probably not?
I don't see any ground-shaking revelations.
Okay.
I think that there already is, and I think there will be more and more information coming out to substantiate what I just said.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, and of course the thing is there are already a spate of books and articles coming out. Some of which are trying to impress the old discredited lone assassin theory. But then there's also others now coming out that are just, rehashing the, evidence to show that something else happened. For example, in my new, Crossfire, you're going to find that even the famous Zapruder film, which, of course, was bought up by Time Life Corporation and was kept from the American public for 15 years after the assassination, okay? And yet, since that became available, and it clearly shows Kennedy being knocked to the left rear by a shot, that indicates a shot from the right front. And,
yeah,
of course, Oswald supposedly was, you know, six floors above him to the rear. But now that's even called into question, because now we have evidence showing that the Zapruder film was in the hands of the CIA's very sophisticated, ahead of its time, photographic centers in New York before it was handed over to Time Life. And I've got 11 Hollywood film and video experts who are now on the record saying that the Zapruder film shows obvious fakery.
Wow.
So you can't even trust the Zapruder film as a valid piece of evidence.
There's a revelation for you, folks. And that's
going
to be in the new Crossfire book that's coming out around November, right?
Yes.
What else do you have on tap? This is the what's next for you, and then I'll let you get going. You know, aside from the Crossfire reissue
and
update.
Well, right now, I'm just trying to get past the 50th anniversary. I've got some ideas for some future books, but it's a little premature to be talking about them.
There you go. That's fine. How about speaking engagements? Any events you want to mention? I'm sure.
I'm going to be at the Lancer conference in Dallas on November the 22nd. Let me think.
Is there a hub we can send folks to find out? JimMars.com.
Well, you can go to my website, which oddly enough is JimMars.com. That's Mars with two R's.
Okay, so folks, stay tuned there for more information on where you can catch Jim live.
Yeah, lots of stuff there. I'm getting ready to post an article about the arms, the under-the-table arms deals that are going on, and this ties together some recent events, the deaths of our ambassador in Benghazi, the fast and furious gun running of the DEA, and the arming of the Syrian rebels. A lot of the major scandals of the last year or so gets tied together, and I will be posting that pretty quick.
Awesome. Sounds
all right.
Good. Well, on that note, Jim, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and helping us kick off season 8. It's been an amazing 7 years so far, and I'm looking forward to another great year of interviews, and I always enjoy starting it with you because I hold you in such high regard. Thank you, man. If not for you, none of this would have happened, so I can't thank you enough.
Don't throw that responsibility back on me. But, Tim, I appreciate it, and best of luck to you in your 8th season.
Thank you very much, sir. Have a great night.
Adios.
That does it for the season premiere of BOA Audio Season 8. Big, big thanks to Jim Mars for once again joining us to kick off another season of BOA Audio. Be sure to check out his website, www.jimmars.com. Pretty simple, all one word, jimmars.com. And do yourself a favor, folks. Go out and pick up our Occulted History. It is outstanding and really is a must-read for any hardcore BOA Audio listener.
Moving right along now, normally it would be time for BOA Audio Listener Feedback, but since this is the season premiere of BOA Audio Season 8, we have a slew of in-house notes to discuss. As teased at the very beginning of this episode, BOA Audio Season 8 is going to be unlike any other previous season of the program. How is that, you ask? Because this is pretty much very similar to how we've kicked off every year of the show. Well, presumably, unless this is the first time you've ever heard BOA Audio, or simply stopped listening when we closed the book on BOA Audio Season 7 back at the beginning of August, you know that we have been producing an all-new version of BOA Audio, simply known as BOA Live. And quite frankly, folks, it's been an awesome ride. But I know that there are certain limitations to the live format. So as I began to put together BOA Audio Season 8, I knew I wanted to bring in the electricity and the economics of time that really help BOA Live and incorporate that into the new season of BOA Audio. So here on the 8th season of this program, we're going to do something very different. We're going to be having taped shows and live programs. That way, hopefully, the interminable wait between episodes that many listeners grew tired of over the last few seasons has come to an end. It allows us to put out a taped show, follow that up with a live show, and then do another taped show after that. That's kind of the plan right now, to sort of alternate between taped shows and live shows. Maybe down the line, I mean, there's going to be 33 episodes here this season. So eventually we may end up doing, you know, two live shows or two taped shows back to back. Depends on the scheduling and all that good stuff. This probably goes without saying, but if you can't tune into the live program, of course you're going to be able to listen to the show down the line. It's going to be posted to the BOA Audio podcast feed, the one you grab the MP3s from today. It'll be available on there probably within 90 minutes of the conclusion of the live program. So if you can't tune in Tuesday nights at 9, which is generally when we're going to do the live show, you're going to be able to listen to it around midnight to 1 a.m. on Wednesday, or kicking off your day Wednesday morning with a fresh BOA Audio. Now, again, I'm probably treading over ground that is known to people, but I'll try and explain a little bit more about what to expect going forward here in Season 8 as we incorporate the live episodes into the mix. You're not going to be hearing me at the beginning of the show preview the episode. You're not going to hear me at the end of the show do these lengthy outros where we do listener feedback and do a whole bunch of plugs and where I talk to the BOA Audio listeners. I think that's going to help us out a lot because these things take a lot longer than you might think and really are part of the big delay between episodes. This way, I'll have a couple of weeks between shows to do all that stuff and hopefully get the episodes out to you in a timely fashion. Beyond that, the only major differences you're going to hear between a BOA Live episode and a taped program, for those folks who are just going to be listening to them as normally and not tuning in live, will be a slight difference in the audio quality. I'm sure some people will say it's better on the live shows. Some folks may say it's worse. I think it's kind of a push, but it's certainly different. And the only other downside is for the folks who really enjoy the in-depth recaps of the episodes, you're only going to get those with the taped shows because those are the result of me sitting down and editing the episode and then carefully putting in each little segment that we discuss in the recap. With the live show, there is no editing, so I don't sit down and really go over the show with a fine-tooth comb and detail all the stuff we talked about in the show. Aside from that, I don't think you're going to notice much difference because I didn't notice much difference when hosting these live programs that we put together over the last 6 weeks or so. Personally, I found it thrilling and I loved doing the live shows. It was a real difference for me as far as producing these kind of things. And it has its pros and it has its cons. And it's definitely something, as I said earlier, I wanted to incorporate here into BOA Audio Season 8. The show is evolving, my friends, and it's evolving in a big way. With all that said, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit here. Normally we plug next week's episode at the end of the show, but in keeping with this taped/live format for BOA Audio Season 8 and getting us off to a strong start here on the new season, you're not even going to have to wait a week to hear from me next, folks. Our next episode will be coming at you live Tuesday, October 8th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and it will feature one of the more controversial guests from BOA Audio Season 7, making her return to the program, this time on the live show, Sharon Hill, the creator and editor of Doubtful News. I can't even really tell you what we're going to be talking about because it will be live, my friends. Once again, Tuesday, October 8th, 2013 at 9 p.m. Eastern. If you want to know how to listen to that, you just simply go to banalofamerica.com and in the box where you see BOA Audio Season 8 with Jim Marr's name there promoting the premiere episode. Right underneath that, it says next episode, live, Tuesday, 10/8/13 at 9 p.m. Eastern, Sharon Hill, Doubtful News. Just click on that. It'll be a link. That'll take you to the webpage where you can listen to the live program. And as noted, if you can't tune in Tuesday the 8th at 9 p.m., within a few hours, the webpage will have rolled over and you'll see all of the linkage there to pick up the MP3s or listen via streaming audio. So I think that pretty much covers how things are going to unfold here on BOA Audio Season 8. I want to hear your thoughts, of course. I want to hear your feedback. I'm still looking for your guest suggestions, so feel free to contact me. If you have questions about how the live format is going to work, definitely shoot me a line, and I'd be happy to answer your questions. You can reach me via boaaudio@hotmail.com or head on over to the website and click the contact button. Additionally, if you are a fan of the interactive, join up at the official BOA forum, theusofe.com, theusofe.com. And, of course, I should plug Banal of America on Facebook. For those folks keeping score at home, we are up to 1,087 likes. So we've left 1,000 in the distance. Now we're looking to get to 1,100. And I'll throw in the shout-out for whoever is number 1,100 in keeping with tradition. Just punch in Banal of America on Facebook and like us. We've been doing a pretty good job at BOA on Facebook, promoting the new episodes of the show as they come up and getting folks in tune with what they'll be hearing from BOA. Now, let me take a moment and thank the outstanding and esteemed BOA staff, Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, Bruce Pretty, Tony Morrill, our webmaster Ray Weigel, and our graphics guru, Jeremy Boston. We are so close to having BOA 3.0 done for you folks. I want to apologize to the BOA staff because they've been sending me stuff to post at the website, and I've just been holding it off because we seem to be closer and closer all the time to getting BOA 3.0 up and running, and I don't want their stuff to get lost in the shuffle. So we're sitting on some columns, which we should have posted soon. I've gotten emails from people asking what is going on with the columnists because we don't have many contributions lately. That's entirely my fault because I've been foolhardy about waiting it out to get BOA 3.0 up and running, but it is very, very close, and much like BOA Live, it will be a game changer for Banal of America. Until then, stay tuned to banalofamerica.com. stay tuned to Banal of America on Facebook. That's kind of become my hub here as we wait for 3.0 to get up and running. Lots of stuff in the cooker, folks. I don't know if you can tell, but I was pretty burned out in the summertime, but I'm feeling more refreshed and more energized and more excited about Banal of America than I have been in years. So I cannot wait to unleash that on the BOA listeners and readers as this entire transformation unfolds. With that in mind, now comes the time where I turn to you folks and ask you to make a donation to the BOA franchise. Using Blog Talk Radio to produce the live programs is a costly endeavor. I can honestly say that BOA Season 8 will probably be the most expensive season of BOA audio ever, but that change in cost is not going to be passed down to you, because unlike so many other programs, folks, BOA is free and shall remain free for as long as we possibly can do so. How do we manage that? That's via donations from the hardcore BOA audio listeners who help us out. If you want to be a part of that crew of folks who are responsible for fueling the paranormal entertainment mothership, there are two ways to do so. You can head on over to banalofamerica.com and click the PayPal button. That'll take you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. It's safe, secure, and simple. But if you don't trust the internet and you want to make a snail mail donation, you're in luck, because we have a P.O. box just for that purpose. Simply write to Tim Banal, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866, and you can find the complete address at Banal of America under the PayPal button. If you decide to send us a donation to the P.O. Box, though, please make it payable to Tim Banal, and please include some correspondence so I can reach out to you and thank you for your donation. As always, it goes without saying, my friends, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards Banal of America and BOA Audio to help keep the entire franchise up and running, freely available, and commercial free for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. I've already plugged the next edition of the program. Let me do so once again. Coming at you Tuesday, October 8th, 2013, at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Sharon Hill of Doubtful News joins us on BOA Audio Season 8 Live. As such, I can't even tell you what the conversation will entail, but I'm interested in finding out what it's been like for Sharon since she first appeared on BOA Audio last spring. What has the reception been from the paranormal community? I'm sure we're also going to get Sharon's take on various stories from the world of the paranormal over the last 6 months. And I want to ask her a little bit about what has been a rather scandalous summer for the skeptical community. So all those topics are on tap for the live edition of the program featuring Sharon Hill. And I should have mentioned this earlier, but one of the exciting parts of the live editions of BOA Audio Season 8 is that you can join in on the fun. There's a phone number for listeners to call in and ask questions. There's a chat room that you can join up in during the live program and submit your questions for the guest as well. So it's certainly a more interactive version of BOA Audio, but still featuring the always compelling conversations. Tune in Tuesday, October 8th, 2013 at 9 p.m. as we welcome Sharon Hill from Doubtful News back to BOA Audio. And on that note, we close the book on the season premiere of BOA Audio Season 8. Once again, enormous thanks to the iconic Jim Mars for joining us on yet another season premiere. And thank you folks out there, the hardcore BOA Audio listeners, the ones who have tuned in year after year, season after season, and supported this program through thick and thin. Your patience is about to be rewarded, my friends, because BOA Audio Season 8 is going to be epic. Thank you for your enduring support of the program. You are the fuel that drives the paranormal entertainment mothership that is Banal of America. Thank you for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.